Hi, welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Andrew Kadnack. Joining me is John Purcell. And we're very lucky to have the authors of Green Nomads. Bob Brown, Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
G'day.
You've done some travelling, haven't you? 19,000 kilometres worth.
19,000 kilometres, 3 months. From Tassie right up the western margins of New South Wales and Queensland and around in a circle and back to Tassie. And what a great 3 months that was.
Well, the pictures, there aren't many words in the book. There's a lot of pictures and they do tell thousands of words. Just looking at, I've been just feeling extraordinarily jealous of the experience is the first reaction that I had to the book. Being able to do this, but then within the introduction, you pretty much say that for many, many years, you couldn't get away and do anything sort of extended holiday.
Yeah, Paul and I got together just before I was elected to the Senate in 1995-6, and 20 years ago, exactly. Uh-huh. And,
but Paul has an idea of what this was.
Well, he was very, very patient because, you know, I'd get home tired and cranky and had to do the washing, and he'd be wanting us to go out to dinner and sure and so on, and then on the flight the next day back out again. Politics is pretty punishing if you're going to make a go of it, and I certainly did the best I could, and it's a great privilege being in Parliament. But here we were, part of the thing of getting out before dropping off the perch, was to spend good time with my wonderful companion. And so we planned it, and we thought about what we'd like to do, and heading off to see these Bush Heritage properties, because I'd had a role in the setting up of Bush Heritage in 1990, seemed like a pretty good thing. By the way, Paul had been to the north of Queensland in the, well, when was that, Paul? 1970s as a jackaroo.
1974, yeah.
So he was on a return mission of sorts too. We both come from the bush, so we were very comfortable out there.
So big question, when you go back after all this time, what did you find? Did you find it dramatically changed? Did you find it better, worse?
I didn't recognise the place.
Oh, that's bad or good?
Well, when I was there, it was a cattle station and it was quite isolated. And I go back there now, they're cropping and big machines and all those sorts of things. And yeah, it wasn't the place I remembered.
And did you get to wander around the area? When you first went there, has anything reverted back to the natural state, or has it actually been more worked?
It's more worked.
Yeah.
And, when I was out there, there was feral pigs and the bird life was on the river, and you don't see quite so much of that now in the developed areas. That's why we like to get off the beaten track and on the gravel roads and go to the more isolated parts of the country, which I found quite, far more interesting.
Yeah.
So we went up the wrong road going to Strathmore Station, which was, it's the biggest leased property in Queensland, almost 1 million hectares. But we went up the wrong road getting there. That's where Paul was jackaroo, but ended up camping on a branch of the Carron River. And first of all, two dingoes came out of the bush and walked across the road. The vehicle was still going around us, nonchalant as you like, and back into the scrub. Then we saw the first goanna, because they're disappearing fast. The cane toads are killing them. And then we saw the jabiroo, this great black and white Australian bird that stands almost as high as I am. And then we camped by a stream, and an stray dog came in and slept next to us for the night under the stars. You know, it's just by accident. Here we were up the wrong road, but we quickly found a campsite and had a great time there. And
but one of the kelpie.
Yeah, it was a kelpie. But one of the things about the book is it's free for everybody who's got a car to do the same thing. We didn't have any big powerful vehicle. We had a Subaru, but we bought roadside in Tassie and a tent. And a leaky tent at that.
And that was it. That's what you
the middle of the night. But there are some folk who can't go, or who are scared of the bush, or worried about snakes, or whatever. And this book's a gift to them, because it's the best of our experience there in well, the pictures are better than 1,000 words, and so there it is. So it's hopefully
we did have a couple of luxuries though. We had a solar pad battery that kept the esky cold.
Luxury.
That's good. That's good. It's not quite glamping, but it is certainly just a teensy bit.
And he cooks a really good baked dinner in the camp oven. I can tell you, Paul's
really
good at that. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So there's one question I wanted to get out there. It was the Bush Heritage Australia. Are these really like you were joining the dots as you went up the
Yeah, we were, John. Most of the properties had been purchased after I went into Parliament and the organisation took off doing its own thing. It now employs about 100 people. It's got multi-million dollar turnover, and it's got 1 million hectares of private national parks, if you like. So we were joining the dots, and we headed to a number of properties, the bigger ones of which was Bull Kamata, which is 150 kilometres west of Broken Hill in South Australia. And the night before we got there, we saw this phenomenal eclipse of the moon standing on a hillside with a huge round boulder, which we called the Moon Rock, and in the grotto behind that, Aboriginal carvings of the moon. I mean, a sensational night out there in wild Australia that we weren't expecting, and that was nowhere on the agenda, but that just came out of the blue. We went from Bull Kamata, which used to have 83,000 sheep on it. It's now been cleared of that, and the kangaroos and the wedge-tails and the yellow-footed rock wallabies are coming back. Across the border into Nari, which is back of Bourke, a wetlands property, and then over into Queensland, Carnarvon Station near Carnarvon Gorge. What a fabulous place, the Bidjara people's country. And then west of the border of the Northern Territory, where Cravens Peak and Etherbooka are two properties, 250,000 hectares each in the Simpson Desert, effectively. And Bush Heritage.
Expression out the back of Bourke. Well,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, literally out the back. Yeah.
So this is private people getting together, putting money together. Are these properties now making money in any way, or are they still being looked
after? No, they're being funded by thousands of Australians sending in donations, which are tax deductible, or bequeathing money. Mm. What a great idea, you know, if you want to leave some money to Bush Heritage, it then converts that into saving a piece of Australia for future generations. I mean, it's a gift to the kids. It's not set up as a tourist organisation, so we were lucky to be able to, for example, we stayed at Etherbooka Homestead out there on the edge of the Simpson Desert, and Paul at night very slowly patched up the hole in the wire netting around the veranda to keep the mozzies out, which a kookaburra had smashed into. it's funded by the public, but it's also public domain. So effectively private national parks, and I think a little bit safer than national parks because they're being opened these days to shooters, cattle, horses, whatever.
Yeah. On your travel as green nomads, did you convert any grey nomads to becoming green nomads as you went along?
We didn't see a great lot of other people where we camped because the nature of it is where we could, we camped.
Mostly by ourselves,
mm-hmm. Which surprised me. I thought that those pictures you see of hundreds of rabbits around a waterhole, I thought it'd be like that. Well, one day I suppose it will be, but not yet. So we'd wait till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then the first bridge we crossed with a stream under it, or a series of waterholes, we'd head upstream or downstream and set up our tent and get the camp ready. Hopefully wait till after sunset when the flies settle down to get the meal going, and then head off early the next morning. But we didn't see a lot of other people, but
we met some lovely people, but we tried to avoid the sing-along around the barbecue, communal barbecue at sunset sort of thing.
Yeah.
I've got an image now because of all the advertising and the constant talk about it, as endless lines of camper vans going around Australia with the grey nomad movement.
Yeah, well, but they also say, you know, if you want to buy such a vehicle, go to Cairns, because so many people get from Sydney or Melbourne or Brisbane to Cairns and think, oh, this is not for us.
Do you think Australians aren't shaped enough by the landscape and the environment? Because when you think of these densely populated cities, now you really, you, I don't think anyone in Sydney would know necessarily what the native flora is anymore. And you say, what's Brisbane? And you'd say, oh, it's a bit hilly. What's Sydney? It's got a beach. You know, do you find now, it's an odd thing to say, but do you find you're more attached to Australia by actually seeing the landscape now and soaking it up?
Yes, and I think Australians are attached to it.
Yeah.
I was just looking at the clock, that ancient, fantastic, ornate clock in the Queen Victoria buildings in Sydney, and there's the landscape, you know, it's sort of pastoral settings. Sure, they're destroying the landscape, they're chopping down trees, and they've got a stylized Aboriginal or two in it. But when you get out there, and particularly if you go out of your way to try to pick up a bit of Aboriginal relationship with land, and we were lucky, for example, at Carnarvon Station to see paintings of the Bidjara people and carvings, and then to run into Aboriginal people on the Mount Tabor station next door, the land starts to, and there's a picture in the book of Paul up in a fig tree on Carnarvon Station, and it, you know, it's like in the kids' book, Find Paul. He's a tiny little dot up in this tree. Yeah. But they suspect that about 600 years ago, that tree was planted by the ancestors of the Bidjara.
Wow.
And the more you get to know about this, the more you think this is an incredible living landscape. It is uniquely Australian. And that night sky, there's nothing like it in the Northern Hemisphere. It's just fabulous. And yeah, you can't come back but feel very much more attached to this wonderful country of ours and wanting to look after it, see that it's protected. And that has gone off the agenda, but I know from, you know, the work of my foundation that you do an opinion poll and there's 80% of people, they want to protect the tarkine. They don't want the swift parrot going to extinction. They don't want massive climate change and they don't want farmlands in places like the Liverpool Plains or the Darling Downs dug up to get more coal or coal seam gas out. So there's a strong sentiment for Australia and its outback and its coasts and its everything, wildlife. But it's not quite, we are in an age of, we're all very comfortable. This is the wealthiest in dollar terms society Australians are ever to exist in human history. And despite all the gristles, we are doing extremely well compared to what other people have in average around the planet or in past history. And it makes us a little bit too relaxed and too careless about our obligation to pass this on in good order. And the extinction rate in Australia's been enormous. We've got to stop that and turn it around. And yet, just in the last few weeks, you know, we've had our Federal Minister for the Environment ticking off on projects which are going to help send more Australian creatures to extinction.
Well, as you said earlier, the way in which we change this is how?
Through the ballot box.
Through the ballot box.
It's a democracy, thank goodness.
Yeah.
One of the four oldest democracies on the planet. And if you don't go up the path to the ballot box on voting day thinking, I'm going to vote for my grandchildren, you've got it wrong. And, you know, where is the fair go in this country? And a fair go includes looking after the interests of those of our kith and kin coming after us. So the options are there, but people have got to take them. And not just the me now, I want the maximum dollar or tax cut or whatever it might be that seems like it's going to be self-serving. We're all doing very well. We need to think about not just the short-term future, but the long-term future and our fellow creatures on this planet. And there's quite a few of them in that book, some by other photographers, but on the back's that majestic wedge-tail eagle, which you find all over Australia, we've got to give them living room as well. And people want that to happen. But it doesn't happen through just somebody else doing it. And that's why Bush Heritage, like my own Bob Brown Foundation, is so important, because these are ways in which, by supporting them, people can help ensure that this wildlife, this Indigenous heritage, these landscapes are protected into the future. By the way, they're also part of our economic well-being. Tourism is a phenomenal job creator. In my home state of Tasmania, helping save the Franklin River has led to an extraordinary economic and employment outcome. For every person employed in logging and mining down there these days, there's 10 or 20 employed in tourism and hospitality. And if we didn't have the Franklin, if we'd allowed everything to go to destruction, we simply wouldn't be getting that. So, you know, for all those people who were involved in that Franklin campaign way back, they were doing a good economic and employment turn for the country, not just looking after the environment.
Well, I can't recommend Green Nomads enough. If you have ever wanted to see the Australia that we don't often get to see, and if you can't get there, this is the book for you. If you want to be inspired to actually finally do it, this is the book for you. And it's a great Christmas present.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bob, Paul, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
Oh, thank you. And have a great time to everybody who's going to head off into this great country to see more of it and get closer to it. It's wonderful.
There's a big country too.
There's great wonders waiting out there.
You can touch the surface.
And remember, at home you can get Green Nomads from booktopia.com.au right now. Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.